Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Mickey from the Indian Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hi, Mickey!
My name is Mickey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mickey.
I'm very grateful to be alive and sober and here with all of you tonight. I do mean that. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. And for all of you that are Eagles fans and you're here right now, I appreciate it. You know, I'm sure it's tough. Monday night, home opener. So I appreciate and love all of you for being here for that. I would normally thank Mike for asking me to come out, but I actually called Mike and asked him if I could come speak. And the reason why I did, is because on Saturday, because of the grace of God, because of AA and because of people like you and meetings like this, I celebrated 10 years of recovery.
Yay!
And, that's pretty awesome to say, because, there was definitely a time in my life, in my 22-year run, that 10 days was hard. I could probably make it 10 minutes. You know, I could probably give myself that credit, but, 10 days, it's not happening. And we'll get into that. So, I do. I got a sobriety date, September 17th, 2012. I do have a home group, the Indian Valley Group of AA. We meet on Friday nights down in Telford. Dealer's choice, baby. You never know what you're going to get when you come there, man. Could be a speaker, could be out of the big book. You know, it could be a topic, or you just want to, you know, complain about our loved ones. I don't know what's going to happen. No one ever knows. And I do have a sponsor. And it's really cool because I was actually sitting over there praying going, like, this is super awesome because my current sponsor is sitting here and my first sponsor, his ashes are buried in that tree right over there. So I actually have two of them with me tonight. Like, that's, I don't know, that's kind of cool. But I do have a sponsor and I'm really grateful for that because I was a mess after my sponsor had passed away. And I didn't have anyone helping me out. I didn't have anyone that I could call and lean on. Now I had a bunch of sponsees. I have a great support network, but I didn't have like that one person. And I had been calling him. We had been talking on the phone like all the time, which is kind of funny because I think we talked more then than we do now after I asked him to sponsor me. But finally, it was like I was talking to somebody, and they were like, dude, I think you're actually, like, using this guy to sponsor you. And I asked him, and of course he said, yeah, you know, because he's incredible. And it is. It's that comfort that, you know, I never know that – I never worry about not being able to get in touch with somebody that's going to help me out. Because that's what this program is about, is helping other people out. And what are we willing to do, right? So – look, it's my responsibility to be up here and to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. The way the big book says it is, I got an opportunity to explain to you how I formed a relationship with a higher power, right? So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But there's 42 stories in the back of this big book that tell you their personal experiences about how they came to that understanding, how they made that relationship. And I'll tell you, now that I've been coming in this program for a little bit now, I mean, that's what this is all about, is the recovery. It's not about my war stories and what I did and, like, you know, like, let's laugh and cry. It's what I'm doing now and how recovery is working for me now and helping you people, you know, come to that understanding if you're not there, or have that experience if you're not having that. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I have an older brother, a younger sister. My parents are still married. My older brother does not drink, but, you know, he's on that California, you know, recovery program. And all I can say about that is, you know, the only thing I say to him all the time is, when that stops working, I hope you call me. I hope you don't do anything stupid, and I hope you call me. My mom and dad both come from two very large families. I do not blame, so I stand up here grateful to be an alcoholic. And the reason why I am is because the life I have today I wouldn't have if I wasn't an alcoholic. I truly believe it's a disease. I truly believe that it's hereditary. And when you look at my family lineage, there is no doubt that it goes on and on. I have lost aunts and I've lost uncles. I've lost grandparents as a direct result of this disease. But I won't argue with anybody if they don't believe that. I just truly believe that. And my mom and dad, I would not stand up here and I would not call any of you an alcoholic or drug addict. That's a decision you need to make for yourself. So I won't say that about my parents, but what I will tell you is that my parents suffer from addiction problems. What I will tell you is that was not evident at all until I got sober. Had zero idea. Zero. Because that's how my childhood was. Alcohol was around all the time. All the time. My mom's family was 30 minutes from us. Her entire family was like 30 minutes from us. And there was family parties all the time. And there was, they always started off with laughing and hugs and kisses and everyone having a great time. And it always ended almost the same exact way every time. People were fighting. People were screaming. There's fights. People were being kicked out. Dishes are being broken. Okay? I'm not saying that happened every single time, but this happened. And why I tell you that is because on that ride home, that half an hour ride home, there was never, never any talk about these people need help or there's a problem or there's an issue. It was all swept under the rug, all of it, every single time. And I was a kid. That's what I remember. So I don't blame my alcoholism. I don't blame the fact that I can't take a drink like a normal person on my family heritage, on what I saw as a kid. I also don't blame my alcoholism on the fact that my father was born in Ireland and immigrated here when he was 6 years old. It just makes my story sound a little bit better. You know, my dad's from Ireland, from the land where alcoholism was born. Right? But it doesn't, that's not the reason why I'm standing up here today. But yeah, alcohol was around all the time. And I'll tell you, the one story I do like to share, I don't know, maybe it's getting a little old and I gotta find a different story to tell about alcohol with my parents, but was Christmas Eve. What I remember about Christmas Eve was we would come home from being out at friends and all I wanted to do was go to bed, but couldn't go to bed until we read 'Twas the Night Before Christmas and Frosty the Snowman. We had to read those two books and then I could go to bed. But we couldn't read those books until we were all together in a room, which meant my mom and dad had to get a special drink. And it was in a really cool looking glass. And it was a really different looking drink. Like I would remember my dad having Budweiser's, but this drink was different. And I remember as a kid being like, I can't wait till I'm old enough to have that. Now, unfortunately, it was a complete disappointment because it was just a snifter glass of Bailey's. All right. And Bailey's was nothing. Okay. Bailey's is like something that you put in your coffee, you know, to help get you to 9 o'clock before you start cracking the real stuff. All right. But that's what I remember. Like, they made it look attractive. It was something that I wanted to do. And that's what my life was like. That's what my childhood was like. I was never deprived of food. I was never deprived of a roof over my head. I never had any of those problems or issues that are very traumatic for kids. I mean, the only trauma I had was I was a fat kid that didn't get to eat Twinkies all the time. That's it. Right? There was no serious trauma of any sort. But alcohol was around all the time. There was never any negative connotation about it. So when I was 16, I started drinking. And I thought I was pretty young until I came into these rooms and I met all of you and found out that I was really late to this. And but the really cool part about my alcoholism is it took off just like that. So I started drinking when I was 16. I was going up to visit my brother at college. One weekend of the month, my best friend and I were allowed to go. What I will tell you about that first night of drinking is, I thought it was like, I did have that moment that Bill talks about in the book, that little aha, like I had arrived, like, holy crap, this is incredible. Like, I truly believe it was some sort of spiritual experience. I'm not saying a positive one, but it was a spiritual experience of a sort, because I graduated from drinking those little sugar colored drink jugs to Mickey's wide mouth malt liquor. I mean, it had my name on it. It was a glass barrel. It was a super awesome bottle. All right. I felt fantastic. I puked. And the next day, all I could think about was doing it again. The only problem was I wasn't allowed to go back up to visit my brother for another month. So like my best friend and I did this for like, we did it for like 3 months, and then was like, all right, I need to find somebody that's doing what I want to do around here. I can't wait. And then go up there, wait a whole month to do this. So within like 3 months of me picking up my first drink, I'm now drinking multiple times during the week. I'm now doing drugs, and my entire high school career, I was inebriated in one form or another for every day of my high school career after that. So I don't know like how soon into, you know, my sophomore year, but that was it. One form or another every single day. And, you know, I never thought I was doing anything wrong. I didn't really care about all the damage I was causing. And if you would have told me at that point that I was causing damage, I would have told you you were crazy. Okay? Like, I would have told you you were crazy. I wasn't hurting anybody. I wasn't doing anything. Except for, I'm selfish, self-centered, and egotistical to the core. I'm controlling every single situation that's around me, and I have no idea. Okay? Because alcohol doesn't work for me the way it works for other people. Right? I was never that person that could just have one or two. Like, I had one and now we're off to the races. And who knows what's going to happen. So I've worked for, my dad had a painting company. I worked for the family business. I helped support my family. I was part of the reason that bills got paid and food got put on the table. Right? But I had to go to work. So I didn't care about my curfews. I didn't care about coming home drunk. I didn't care about any of those things. See, because my disease told me that I was going to do whatever I wanted to do, whenever I wanted, no matter what. It didn't matter who I hurt, who I stepped on, or who I destroyed. I was going to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. That's what my disease told me. And that's what I did. And I was slowly killing my mom and my dad. Very slowly killing them. And, you know, it was the same story over and over again. I'd come home at 2 o'clock in the morning. They'd scream and yell at me. We'll talk about it after work. He's got to go to bed. I go to bed. I go to work. I come back home. We talk about it. And I go back out and do the same exact thing. I mean, the same exact thing over and over and over and over again. So the really cool part about my alcohol is I'm a blackout drunk too. So I was a blackout drunk from day one. Okay. So I would spend all of my mornings trying to figure out how I got home. And it really didn't take that long before I figured out that I was driving myself home. So not only am I destroying my mom and my dad, but I'm now putting millions and millions of people at risk every single night that I am taking a drink. But I didn't care, because I'm going to do what I want to do whenever I want to do it. I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm doing what everyone else is doing, right? I go to college, I leave college, I come home, and that starts my interaction with the police. Now, you know, I get this opportunity to be up here and tell you what it was like and you know, to tell you how I got my seat here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm a blackout drunk, and I'm a multiple DUI offender. I have 4 DUIs. I got my first one in 97, my second in 99, my third in 04, and you can do the math. You know how many years that is. And when I got arrested in 04, I ended up getting sentenced to 1 to 2 in a county facility. And never once did I think I had a problem. Never once was there any negative connotation put on me or said to me from my family and loved ones. It was all, Mickey's going to be okay. We're going to get through this. Never once. I spent 14 months in jail. I got on work release. You want to know the coolest part about being a blackout alcoholic of the hopeless variety like it talks about in the big book? Because that's me. as I'm sitting in work release and I'm watching people come back every single night drunk from work, falling over the tables, dropping their trays. This is what I'm watching. And I don't sit there and go, wow, that's a really bad idea, dude. You're in jail. Like, why are you doing that? No. My thought was, this is awesome. And I'm going to be fine here. They're going to let me out to work and I'm going to go drinking. That's what I'm going to do. And the first day that I got out on work release, I took two buses to a train station that had a third shift bar. And at 6:30, I was drinking. I picked up the payphone. I called my boss and said, dude, the bus was late getting me to the train station. For me, I just missed the train to Doylestown, so I'm going to be an hour late. The first day I got out on work release in jail for a third DUI. Because that's what my disease tells me. Because I don't handle alcohol the way other people do. Right? It says in step two that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I'm in jail for 1 to 2 for a DUI and I'm drinking on work release. If that's not insane, I really don't know what is. But that's what my life was like. Alcohol controlled my life. Alcohol was by far the strongest influence that I had. It didn't matter what was going on in my life. Alcohol was going to make that better. The only problem is all of those problems are still there. Okay, so I can drink as much as I want. I can black out, forget all about it. But if I'm lucky enough to wake up the next day, it's still there. So you fast forward another 4 years and I got arrested for my fourth DUI. And this is when, you know, my life then started. And I can say that from up here from the podium right now that, it was the best day of my life. It was September 16th, 2012. And the reason why I say that is because the jig was up. It was very, very easy for me to admit I was an alcoholic drug addict. It was very, very easy for me to admit. Because at 4:05 on that Sunday, I was supposed to be at baggage claim at Philly International Airport. At 4:05 on the dot. And instead of being at the baggage claim at Philly International, I was being arrested for a fourth DUI. And my phone rang and it was my wife. And the officer said, no, Mrs. Hurley. This is not your husband. This is Officer Keeble. Your husband's being arrested for a DUI. Find your own way home from the airport. And he hung up on her. And I sat there and listened to that half of the conversation. Now, I didn't think she was going to stick around, but the jig was up. It was very easy for me to admit I had a problem, right? So we talk about the admission. We talk about the acceptance. But what about the action? What am I going to do about it? It was very easy for me to admit I was an alcoholic. It was very easy for me to accept that. It's blatantly obvious. I got a fourth DUI now. But what am I going to do about it? What action am I going to take on it? So I did what every great alcoholic does. And I went to work. I'm going to work day and night. I'm going to make so much money because I'm not drinking and drugging. And everything's going to be great. Well, 30 days later, I was way worse than I was when I was drinking and drugging, man. And I called up my wife. She hadn't left yet, and I called her up and I said, I need some help. I need a meeting. And what it felt like to me was like 10 seconds of keyboard. And she was like, Mickey, I have great news for you. And I was like, what's that? This was a Thursday. She's like, there's a meeting less than a mile from us tomorrow night, which is going to be great for you because you're going to be able to walk there when you lose your license. And that's exactly what happened. I walked to that meeting for a really long time. I think out of spite she didn't drive me or pick me up. But, I mean, me walking to that meeting was pretty awesome. It was pretty incredible. But that night I went to that meeting. And it's my home group on Friday nights. And there's a really long hallway, two sets of double doors. I was so excited to go to this meeting. I can't tell you, all day Friday, I don't know what I did Friday. I probably didn't actually do anything, but I was really excited. Like, I'm going to get some help. And I walked through that first set of double doors, and like, I'm ready to go, dude. Like, I'm happy. I'm pumped. Like, this is going to be great. I hear laughter. I hear clapping. I see people eating donuts and drinking coffee. And like, I wasn't happy at all in those 30 days. And I got to that second set of double doors, man, and my heart started pounding. I started sweating, and I was like, dude, this isn't for me. Like, no, I can't do this. I'm not walking in there. But I had already made it to the doorway and everybody had already seen me. So like I had to come up with a lie. Okay, so here I am. I'm in 22 years of active addiction. I could lie with the best of them, man. I could cheat, steal, manipulate. I could do whatever. So I can definitely come up with a lie to get out of this because I am not walking in this room right now. And the only lie I could think of, this is a program of honesty. The only lie I could think of was to ask, is this not the Boy Scout meeting? Okay, I am 35 years old. I do not look good, okay? And I'm asking about a Boy Scout meeting. Now, the funny part is there is a troop, a Boy Scout troop that meets at that church on Wednesday nights, okay? So it was actually kind of like a legitimate question. But how creepy is it that this, I mean, I did not look good. 35-year-old man is asking about a Boy Scout meeting, right? So there was no way I was going to say it. I was too embarrassed that that was the only thing I could come up with. And thank God I did it. It probably would have went down as a really good joke in history in AA around here, but I didn't. But what happened was a wholesale miracle. What happened was I had complete strangers coming up to me and hugging me and shaking my hand and giving me phone numbers and telling me, like, you don't have to live this way anymore. You don't have to continue to die. And these people, like, they understood what was going on. I mean, they looked at me. It was like, you know, sharks attacking. They smelled fresh blood and they were on me telling me that everything was going to be okay. You know? And, I ended up meeting my first sponsor that night and I met a bunch of other guys and I spent like an hour and a half outside talking to these guys after the meeting, you know, and like they were talking my language, like they understood what I was doing, but I'm special and I knew I was special and I knew I had a story that no one had ever heard before, right? But these guys let me know that I wasn't special. I mean, this man that I asked to sponsor me said to me the first night I met him, he said, you know, you are not special. And he didn't say it in those terms, man. He cursed. And he cursed a lot. My first sponsor was not a soft, cuddly man. Dude, he was brutally honest and brash. He was a curmudgeon of an old man. We had nothing in common except soccer and alcoholism. Everything else was completely different. But it was what I needed. It was what I needed. Because I had been in control of my life, so to say, up to that point, right? My best thinking got me in jail a second time. My best thinking said it was okay to have 4 DUIs. My best thinking thought that instead of paying the electric bill, let me go buy a couple bottles of Jack Daniels and a 30-pack of Budweiser. Because that's what is important to me. And then I'll hide it downstairs in the basement so that after dinner, I can be like, okay, go get the kids ready for bed. I'm going to go downstairs and have a drink and a smoke real quick and then be up, but not show up again for another 3 hours. And then I want to know why the kids aren't awake and running around and saying hi to me, you know? Because I've been downstairs for 3 hours drinking. You know, that's what I did. But these guys talked to me, man. They told me my life was going to be okay. And they were happy, joyous, and free, and I was angry, pissed off, and scared. And that's what I can tell you. And it was very attractive to me. And I followed these guys around for a really long time. And listening to everything they had. And they were just suggestions. See, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is just 12 simple suggestions right there. We make them difficult. They're 12 simple suggestions, right? It's easy for me to admit I'm an alcoholic. It's easy for me to accept it. But what action am I going to take on those? Right? So me being the really good alcoholic I am, I'm now in the rooms, I got a sponsor, I'm doing the work, and I come home because I read all the steps, I knew what they were about, I was court ordered to go to AA before, and I went home and I told my wife that I was like, you know, I'm not going to make amends, I'm not going to say I'm sorry to my best friend's wife, and I'm not going to say sorry to your sister, because I never did anything wrong to them when I was drinking. Right? Okay, so like, still an alcoholic mind, right? This is what I'm telling my wife. Like, I'll do part of the program. I'll do what they tell me, but I'm not doing that. Well, I started reading this big book with my sponsor every week, and I realized that those were the first two people I needed to make amends to. Those people had to be on my list. You know? But that's like the miracle of what happens when I stop getting in the way. That's the miracle of what happens when I start doing something different. That is the miracle that happens when I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Because I was asked that by my sponsor, you know, was there anything that ever came that you weren't willing to do for your addiction? And I was like, well, you know, like, what do you mean? He was like, you know, if you didn't have any money or you didn't have any gas for your car or like, you know, did you, would anything ever stop you? And I was like, no, nothing ever stopped me. Certainly not the weather. You know, I love it when it rains and people don't come to meetings. Like, how's the rain stopping you from getting to a meeting, right? But nothing ever, I was willing to do whatever it took. He said, well, are you willing to do whatever it takes for your recovery? This guy was happy, joyous, and free. I was angry, pissed off, and scared. Absolutely. Right? And so we started reading this book, man, and I started to realize that I really wasn't that good of a person. But that didn't mean that I was a terrible person. My life was over, right? I mean, I had no idea how I was going to live life without drugs and alcohol, right? When I got arrested for my third DUI and before I went to jail, my lawyer told me that I needed some window dressing. He said, if you're going to go to jail, you need to make sure that you don't end up in a state prison. So I need you to go to like rehab. And I was like, well, I'm not checking myself in anywhere. And he's like, well, I need you to go to IOP. So I go to IOP. I walked into this therapy session. This lady had a double master's. I mean, she went to school longer than I had been alive. And I walked into that meeting and I said to her, she was like, so what would you like out of this? And I said, I'm not going to stop drinking. But you need to teach me how to stop blacking out and how to stop getting behind the wheel. Right? Because this is how my mind works. Right? Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. So you got to help me with the rest of it. But going through this work, man, it's either you're willing to do it or you're not willing to do it. Right? And I was willing to do whatever it took. And, you know, we started going through this and I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about why I did and acted the way I did, right? Because this is a disease. It takes away all of my control. It takes away all of my thought. It takes everything away. It controls everything I do. So I got to live my life a different way. And that means that I got to be willing to do whatever it takes to help out the next person. Because that was another question he asked me. I'll take you through this work. I will give you what I was so freely shown. But you've got to be willing to do the same thing. Are you willing to do that? Absolutely, I am. It was all the willingness, right? I mean, I can't force my recovery down your throat. But if you're willing to take my suggestions and do it, then you're going to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's all I want it to be. That's all I want it to be. And we went through this work. Some of the pretty funny things that happened when we were doing this. You know, and you also don't forget the fact that I'm getting ready to go back to jail. Okay, so like, why my life's getting better, why I'm becoming free of this, of all of this crap and everything that I've been holding on to, I still have this jail bid coming up. And, you know, we were sitting in my basement one night, and my sponsor said, what's the most important thing in your life? And I was like, man, I got this one. Because I didn't want to screw up. I didn't want to screw any of this work up. Because I thought if I screwed this up, I was going to go back out, right? At some point, I'm going back out. And I said, my wife and kids. And we were in my house. We were in the basement. And he started laughing at me. And I'm not talking like a little giggle. Like a deep belly laugh. And he was like, nah, man. Recovery is the most important thing in your life. So I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I know what's best for me. And all I could think was, how disrespectful are you being? How disrespectful are you being? You were in my house laughing at me because I tell you that my wife and kids are the most important thing in my life. And he goes, no, man, recovery is. So I did what every good alcoholic does. I kicked him out of the house. I told him I was tired. We'll get together tomorrow. See you later. Vamos. I go up, I kick him out, I go upstairs, I tell my wife the exact same story except for what he told me, what he said to me, and she turned to me and goes, well, maybe he's right. And I was like, I was offended. I was hurt, I was offended. Like, you're supposed to be on my side. You're not supposed to be taking his side, you know? And I think the way I actually started that conversation was, I think I just made the worst decision of my life asking this guy to sponsor me, because he just told me you guys aren't important, right? But if I don't have my recovery, I don't have my wife and kids. If I don't have my recovery, I'm not standing up here right now celebrating 10 years. I don't have sponsees. I haven't been able to be free of the bondage of self. I don't have any of that if I don't have recovery. And what recovery is to me is meetings. What recovery is to me is going to meetings, reaching out your hand, getting a newcomer, and passing on what was so freely given to you. That's what I know. That's what I was shown. That's what was suggested of me. And that's why I have the life that I have. So I got to continue doing that one day at a time. So yeah, 10 years is really cool, but what it's really about is the 24-hour period. That's what we have. I don't have to fix everything at once. I just have to be grateful and to live in today, right? And to be a positive member of society. So I stand up here dressed the way I am because that's what my sponsor had shown me, right? I mean, how many of you have lost a friend or a family member as a direct result of this disease? I'm sure it's a lot. Right? Because this is a pretty serious thing. So he told me, man, you got to suit up and show up. That's why I get dressed up. That's why I'm up here in a suit and a tie. Not because I'm up here trying to show you that I'm better than you, but one day at a time, one commitment at a time, one opportunity at a time. When my phone rings at 2 a.m. in the morning and it's a sponsee, I got to pick that phone call up. I have that obligation to do whatever it takes for my recovery. Now, I told you I fought my sponsor the whole way. I fought him because I knew what was best for me. I always did what I wanted to do, right? Well, I learned that the hard way about recovery and saying no. It was my daughter's birthday. I was at my mother-in-law's house celebrating her birthday. And my sponsor called me up and said, hey, I need you to meet me at Penn Foundation at 6:30 tonight. You're speaking. And I said, Rich, I can't meet you there. And he was just like, why not? I was like, I'm celebrating my daughter's birthday at my mother-in-law's house right now. Like, I can't meet you. And all he said to me on the phone was, don't forget why you were able to celebrate your daughter's birthday. Now, that wasn't a guilt knife that he stabbed in my back and twisted. It wasn't. Rich was just trying to teach me and show me how quickly I took my will back and decided what I was going to do. Like, I didn't go to my wife and talk to her. I didn't go to my daughter and talk to her. You know, I just immediately told him, no, I'm not doing that. See, because I had to get a relationship with a higher power, and I got one, and it made my life so much better. But I'm going to pick and choose now when I want to use that higher power. Like, I'm going to make that decision now. See, my best thinking puts me in jail. My best thinking gets me in trouble. So now all of a sudden, what, because I'm sober and I got a little bit of time underneath me, like, that's okay? Like, no, it's not okay. I still go to meetings. I'm not good. I'm going to tell you right now. My wife can sit here and tell you right now that I am not the same person if I go to one meeting a week. I am not. But man, if I'm getting my medicine 3 to 4 times a week, dude, like, life is good. Life is good. So I go through all this work. A day after my 6-month anniversary, I go back to jail. I get out of jail and now I'm off and running because that was the last speed bump I had in this. Right? So now I get to pass on what was so freely given to me. And I'm very grateful to stand up here and to tell you that I sponsored and have sponsored many, many men. And as difficult as that is, it is what has given me the life that I have today. You know, I heard a gentleman from this podium outside right here from New York City come up here and say that real AA is not the hour from the preamble to the Lord's Prayer. That real AA is the 23 hours from the Lord's Prayer to the preamble. What do you do in the other 23 hours of the day? Because anybody can come into a meeting and they can spit out pages and words and verses. But what are you doing the other 23 hours in the day? Right? Am I picking and choosing just like I did that night that Rich called me and asked me to go to that commitment with him? Am I picking and choosing what I want to do? You know? Am I taking self-will back? Am I trying to control a little bit of something? Or am I allowing my higher power to do that? See, because the cool thing for me was my father was a former priest. Became an ordained minister, married my mom, they had kids. I was the first of those. And, you know, you would have thought that, like, I was this real religious, like, guru. And I wasn't. I wasn't, man. We went to church on Easter and Christmas, weddings and funerals. That's what we did, right? But my father was a very, very spiritual man. So when I came into this program and Rich said to me, man, you're going to have to, he's like, do you believe in God? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, but you're going to have to build that relationship with him because you were spiritually sick. And I was like, okay, well, how do I do that? And he's like, I got four simple things for you to do. I was like, okay, your life's going to get better if you do these things. Okay, what are they? First thing, I need you to pray first thing in the morning. I'm like, okay, what do I pray? Right? Because I want clear-cut instructions. And he says, how about you just say, please help me? And I was like, okay, I can do that. That's simple. What's number two? I need you to call me. I said, okay. But not just call me, I need you to call another alcoholic. You gotta reach out to someone else. And I'm like, okay, cool, I can do that. No problem. Like, this guy's helping save my life. Of course I'm gonna call him, right? I'm like, I can do that. Okay, two of the four things, very easy. What's three? I need you to go to a meeting. Okay? This, like, meetings are fun, man. I'm loving them, right? I crossed over that barrier of, you know, needing to wanting meetings. And I was like, well, what's the fourth thing? Because here we go. This is gonna be the one thing that I can't do. He's like, I need you to pray last thing at night before you go to bed. And I was like, okay. Like, I don't know, this has got to be some sort of trick question. Like, dude, I'm going to jail. And you're telling me I do these four things, my life's going to get better? But the crazy part is I started doing those four things, and guess what? My life got better. Right? Because I realized, one, that I wasn't the center of the universe. I realized that, you know, by giving everything up, and taking these suggestions and living my life a different way, that my life's getting better now. Right? So when my life gets crappy, it's real easy for me to figure out why it's getting crappy. Because I stopped doing the things that work so well for me in my life. I stopped going to the meetings. I stopped taking the commitments. I stopped picking up the phone. Now see, the cool part for me about that is I still have that man's voice ringing in my head. So whenever I take my will back and my life gets shitty, man, I'm like, dude, well, you know what? I didn't pray every morning this week. I didn't pray every night this week. I didn't reach out. I'm the one that bailed on my sponsee. You know, I can run off the list of things. It's decisions that I made, conscious choices that I made. But why would you stop doing something that works so well for you? Why? Because we're alcoholics, man. I mean, what does it say in the big book? That we are undisciplined. Absolutely, 100% true. The book gives us a way to be disciplined by somebody else, something greater than us. You know, I was at a meeting. A gentleman was celebrating 10 days of being sober, right? And I'm celebrating 10 years. So I talked to him after that meeting and I said, you know what's so awesome about that? Is it says right in our book that we are not cured of this disease. That what we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's what we have. That's exactly what the book said. So we have today. So what am I doing today? What am I doing the other 23 hours of the day to continue to live this happy, joyous, and free life? And I said to him that if he continues to do this one day at a time, he will then be able to celebrate 10 years. But you got to start somewhere. You got to do something different. I went to a meeting on Easter Sunday, you know, because that's what really good alcoholics do when they get recovery, you know, is now I tell my family I need to go to a meeting, even if it's Easter Sunday. And the gentleman, it was at the Flower Town Clubhouse. And a gentleman on Easter Sunday was celebrating 27 years in recovery. And he said, I got the best acronym for the word change. I mean, he had me in his story, you know, I was fully engaged. He was like, current habits are not good enough. Current habits are not good enough. I stand up here today with 27 years of recovery and I tell you that I need to do something different today than I did yesterday. Because if I sit and I rest on what I did yesterday and I rest on what I did last year and I rest on what has gotten me 10 years, then I'm getting one day closer to the drink instead of one day further away from the drink. See, I had to change everything. That didn't mean that I had to give everything up. I didn't have to give up all my friends and family who like to drink or, you know, just because I couldn't be around them anymore. See, I was the one with the problem. See, alcohol and drugs weren't the problem. They were my solution. I was the problem. All those times that I was, you know, had a bad day, it didn't matter what happened. It was just an excuse to justify why I was going to go out drinking that night, right? But that was my solution to mask everything up. And like I said to you, the only problem is when I wake up the next day, that problem's still there. And actually, there's like 10 more problems now, right? Because who knows what I was doing that night? So you know, that's what I do. I get every morning that I wake up, I get an opportunity to be of service. I get an opportunity to actually have a little bit of control of what I'm going to do, right? Am I going to get on my knees and pray and ask for help and guidance so that I can be of service? Or am I going to skip over that because I got 10 years, so I'm good to go, right? That's me controlling what's going on. But why would I stop doing something that works so well in my life? Right? Now, I've been sober for 10 years now, man. This past year has been one of the hardest years of my life. There has been so many things. I'm going to tell you this. God's honest truth. By the time we were halfway through March, I was already done with 2022. I was already done with it. There was so much trauma and tragedy and heartbreak. I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. I was already done with it. But you know what? I was given a cheat code. 12 simple suggestions that could get me through anything. But was I willing to do something about that? And there's no reason. This is not a pity party. There's no reason for me to go through those things. You want to know what happened to me earlier in this year? I will gladly tell you outside of the meeting. But what I can tell you is there are none of those things. It never crossed my mind that it would be better to put alcohol in my body. Nope. Absolutely not. Why would I stop doing something that works so well for me in my life, right? It's not about me. It's about what I'm willing to do. You know, Bill and Bob, they wrote this book in like 33, 34, 35, they published it in 39, right? So what they did is groundbreaking. They were absolute geniuses for it. But the couple of things I'm going to share on it right now is the fact that back then, on Sunday, you went to church, you believed in God, or you were not a good person, right? And in these 12 steps, it mentions the word God 4 times. And after two of them, it's with a comma. It says, as you understand it. Because you don't have to believe in God. You just have to find and believe in something greater than yourself. Right? And that's pretty amazing. But then you go down to step 10 right there. They know that you are going to screw up. You are human. You are going to screw up. 10 is the way to make sure that that's all right. It doesn't say in our big book, if these things happen. It says, when these things occur, this is what we do. Now, I don't use that as a reservation to be an asshole. I don't use that as a reservation to be like, it's okay that I act out tonight. I don't. Because that doesn't make me a better person. Okay? It's progress, not perfection. So I do have to strive to do something better, to be a better person. Right? But I have a way to deal with that now. So I'm not just sitting in that and I'm not stewing in that. Because like I said, My best thinking put me in jail twice. My best thinking never leads to anything good. You know, I've been awarded many, many luxuries. My wife did not leave me. I would say that we're happily married. I don't know if she would agree with me, especially after the last couple of weeks. Just, it's a program of honesty. But I was blessed to, one of my family members, my aunt, has been in recovery a really long time. And, it's pretty special. It's super special. And I'm going to share a story with you about my aunt. Because, you know, I forgot about it. And I, you know, like I told you, I destroyed a lot of people's lives. And I was not a good person. And I got out of jail. My aunt got sober in 86. And, I got out of jail in 06. And, I went to see her over the summer. She was, we were at a cancer walk. And I do tell this story, you know, it's not just because you're here. I do tell this story all the time. And, she was so happy to see me, man. She was so happy to see me. And she's sitting in this camper and she says to me, "Mickey, where are you going? What meetings are you going to? I want to go with you. I want to be a part of your recovery. I want to be a part of helping you out." And I looked her straight in the eye and said, "Ginny, I'm going to control this. I got it. I'm going to be okay." And I watched her heart break through her eyes. And I completely forgot about that. Completely forgot about that until I got sober. And you know what? And I couldn't stop thinking about her. But you know what? I didn't want to call her right away and tell her I was sober, right? Like, I wanted to hit like a little bit of a milestone, right? And I called her after 60 days or maybe it was 90 days. I don't know. You know, all those days just... they just, you know, they all clump together now. And I called her and we've been celebrating ever since then. And, you know, she's an extremely special person. Relationship I have with her right now, you know, I couldn't be more blessed for it. And she's pretty much the whole reason I'm up here right now. Cause she wanted to come up and she wanted to celebrate with me. And that means a lot. And, you know, that, you know, she never gave up on me. And she wanted to be there. And, you know, so I reached out to Mike and I did the reverse what you're supposed to do and said, "Hey man, you know, can I speak?" And he said, "Yeah." And I'm here now talking to you guys and I'm sharing my experience, strength and hope with you. But it's because of people like you and it's because of my aunt, you know, that, you know, you guys show me a way to live. You continue to give me suggestions that help me out. You continue to show me that this does work no matter what and under any and all circumstances. I don't have to pick up a drink. It's not going to make my life better. It's not. And that's why I am up here. And that's how this program works. You know, I usually close with, you know, letting you know that I will continue to keep coming back and I will continue to trust God, clean house, and help others. Because that's how simple this program is, right? Those three simple things, man. You can break it down that simple. Trust God, clean house, and help others. But tonight, I'm not. I'm going to flip it up on you guys a little bit here. And, you know, my aunt is here tonight and her anniversary is September 8th. So she just celebrated 36 years. So I actually had the honor of giving her a coin tonight. So it's more important than me, like our relationship and the fact that I can do that right now. It means the world to me. And, you know, she never gave up. And, people just seem to not give up on me, and I am blessed for that, and I'm very, very grateful. So, would all of you please help me congratulate my Aunt Jenny on getting 36 years on September 8th?